All right, we are back for the final episode of CH9 Live for day one. Send your questions to #CH9 Live. Very special guest today, Dr. Sneath joins us.
Charles, how are you doing?
Great, man. To see you. It's been way too long.
Yeah.
Way too long.
You've been busy today.
You're very, very busy.
Yeah, good job.
Sir?
Richard Campbell.
Richard Campbell, of course. People know who you are.
I get around.
So, Dr. Sneath, there's a lot of news today.
Yeah,
Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, we had a keynote this morning, obviously, and you interviewed Dean and Giorgio earlier today.
Yes, absolutely.
And, so we talked about, in particular, i10.
Yes.
There you go. There's a little slip there. I've been talking about i9 for so long.
Understood.
So we introduced i10 to the world through the platform preview.
Yep.
And showed some performance demos, showed a few new features that we're introducing in i10,
mm-hmm.
things like CSS gradients and the ECMAScript
strict
mode.
Yes.
For Doug, if he's still there somewhere in the
background. Doug's around. He was very happy about that.
And we've also done some other things around layout. So we did some multi-column grid, some Flexbox stuff. So really all about starting to take IE and make it even more of a platform for the next generation. So
excellent.
Some fun stuff.
Now, of course, you do a lot of the work behind the scenes because that's what you do.
That's right.
Now, you're on the outside looking in. What do you think? What's going on?
Well, the feature set was awesome. But it also was a sense of the moment IE9 shipped, IE10 continued. You know, there was never almost like they didn't even take a break. Just keep on going because there's more to do. The standards still aren't ratified. Right. There's still stuff being experimented with. And it was great conversation about the HTML5 labs
mm-hmm.
and just the fact that here are certain features like WebSockets and IndexedDB and so forth mm-hmm. that are available for download if you want to experiment with them, but they're not built into the product. So mm-hmm. there's a safety factor there. And same thing with IE10 that, you know, we're building new versions all the time, and you can keep trying it and seeing how we're improving things. Mm. It doesn't stop. There will be more browsers. You know, this doesn't end here at IE9.
Absolutely.
So that was really, the message jumped out to me is, oh, we're still going.
Yeah. Yep.
Good news, because there's more.
And I thought it was really cool that Stephen, who co-hosted the keynote, had mentioned our next developer conference.
Yeah, Anaheim.
That was awesome, man.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
September 13th to 16th?
I think 13th. Anaheim.
Yeah.
Anaheim, and that's actually news.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it certainly was, yeah.
Right on.
That's the first time I've heard those dates. I put it in my phone immediately. I'm going to need to block out those dates.
Yeah. And Anaheim is not far from Disneyland.
That's true.
Yeah. We'll be able to go on rides and stuff like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it actually is and what it's really going to be called.
So one of the other themes from the day, now listen, ask questions. Dr. Sneath, this is his first time on here. Ask some questions. #CH9 Live. Now let's get to the open source kind of story that we learned today in one of the keynotes. Uh-huh. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like our, you know, we seem to be really into open source and standards now and stuff like that. It's a really interesting cultural sort of strategic mind shift, if you will.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, certainly on the standard side, you know, with HTML5, of course, it's not any one body or any one person driving it. It's really a consortium of a variety of different individuals, organizations, browser vendors, other, you know, special experts and others with interest. And so, you know, it's fun because if you think about other technologies we've historically been working on, like Silverlight, you know, it's a different model. It's very much, you know, it's literally a matter of how fast can you code it.
Exactly.
How, you know, it's a simpler process in many ways. Mm-hmm. But with HTML5, you know, what you get out of it at the end is something that is just great in terms of being able to go so many different places. I mean, you think where the web is today, mm-hmm. you know, it's on, you know, my TV's got a web browser in it. You know? And so just as we sort of think forward, HTML5 is really becoming that lingua franca, the kind of open just way to communicate. And it's just going to be great to see, you know, as this stuff matures, we're really just seeing the very, very earliest glimpses of what's possible here. And
absolutely,
it'll take a couple of years, like new technology always does, to get embedded and exposed across all the other places.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of interest in the future there.
Absolutely. What do you think?
Well, I was looking about the Scott Guthrie portion of the keynote where Scott Hanselman, who I think's better looking than Scott Guthrie gives credit to, talked about Microsoft contributing to jQuery. And they, you know, there's a bunch of stuff now that Microsoft's added to jQuery, a completely open source project, not started by Microsoft at all. And at the same time, you've also now got NuGet, which is created by Microsoft, but is completely open source.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, these new kind of roles, I think, for Microsoft. It's interesting to see that evolution and how the web team in general has been working more with the different styles of building applications. Mm-hmm. Great problem. I talked to Phil Hack today, and he was talking about how NuGet is solving the interesting challenge around MVC3, which again, largely, that's not a an externally contributed project, but the source is all available for people to look at, yet another model to work in. But every time they ship MVC, they have to ship a version of jQuery, but jQuery revs every month. So when you ship it, it's invariably out of date. Yeah. But if you set it up with NuGet, then you can immediately get the new version as soon as you install, and or anytime you want to update things, NuGet takes care of that for you.
Excellent.
So just a really different model on how you deal with the different cadences of things being updated, taking a lot of that pain away, and in a very open way where I think more Microsoft code exposed to more people than ever before, under the hood.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, we also talked a little bit about interoperability and standards in the cloud. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Wow.
In the cloud. So Microsoft's focus on standards in the cloud development. So let's talk, I mean, when you think about cloud development, I don't think about HTML5.
Mm-hmm. No.
Right, it's client. So in the cloud, when we're talking about standards, what kind of standards are there in the stateless cloud? Help me understand this.
Yeah.
I think they're still in early days. I put on my IT infrastructure hat for a lot of that conversation, and the Embarco guys talked about the automating of elasticity, which I think is the most powerful part of cloud, and yet is almost impossible to do.
Interesting.
Because it's very hard when you look at an application to know, does this need more power, more processors, more memory, or can I actually cut it back? Mm-hmm. And it's not until you really understand the app that you can control that. So we start talking about standards. We talk about, can I come up with a standard way to instrument my application and then communicate to the cloud infrastructure I'm running on to say, hey, I need more room, I need more memory, I need more resources, or no, I can shed those now. And so their announcement that they're actually automating that as part of their CMS solution, because they understand their app, they understand that page load time is what matters, that that's what people sense. And so if you can see this page consistently loads every 2 seconds, when it starts getting slower, now let's make a call up to the cloud infrastructure and give ourselves some more processing units and get that speed back up again. And when it's speeding along really well, maybe I can shed some units and save some money.
Yeah, that's interesting. But the question I'd ask there is the real-time nature of the elasticity, because you have to spin up new instances. That takes time.
It takes a few minutes.
It's a very hard problem for sort of real-time elasticity in the cloud.
Absolutely.
No one solved that yet, I don't believe.
I don't think we've got a great solution.
But that's a nice, they're doing great work.
We're moving that way.
Yes.
And I mean, I've done that kind of work before when it wasn't called cloud, but it was, we have hardware available for different tasks and we light it up. It is a certain amount of lag to how long it's going to take to light those things up. And believe me, the ability to spin up stuff for cloud is much shorter. It's measured in seconds, maybe minutes. So that's a pretty good response time compared to, you know, the typical cycle of you get a phone call from the CTO saying, why is the website so slow? You know, and already it's been many minutes at that point, and then you've got to try and solve the problem. I think we're going to go into a really interesting place where I'm only paying for what I use, and I can size what I need on demand.
And it's just the temporary nature of it, I think. I had some direct experience of this just last year. Work with a non-profit organization called Heal Africa, and they're a small charity. They kind of work, you know, literally like three people in the States, and an organization in Africa, they were featured on Oprah. They had like their Oprah moments, and she decided to kind of feature them. And of course, you can imagine like they're a tiny organization.
Your website's about to tip over.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now, when you need it the most.
Yeah, and you know, actually, Oprah said to them, "Look, here are all the requirements we require you to have before you know you can go on the show." And they're like, "We can't afford to buy you know $100,000 worth of server infrastructure just for an Oprah moment." And so you know, that we actually put them on Azure, and they were on the cloud. And,
really?
And we just spun up, I forget how many large instances, and they you know had that. And of course, we had to monitor it, and it wasn't the same level of elasticity that there is now. But it was
preemptive.
It was a solution. It cost us, you know, we got to borrow $100,000 worth of server infrastructure for just 2 days, you know, and
amazing.
Then we just were able to dial it right back again.
That's awesome.
And I think when you have an event-driven scenario like that, it's worth putting the people in place and watching what you need and lighting stuff up as you go. And interesting thing about Azure is you can light an instance, and if it's not being used very much, it doesn't cost you very much.
Right.
You know, the core instance has a certain cost to it, but then you pay for CPU and you pay for bandwidth, and if those things aren't being used, they don't cost you.
Yeah.
So it's safe to over-provision. which is what we've always done before. We just, it costs a lot more because we bought a lot of excess equipment. You outfit your racks for peak load, which happens once a day, once a week. Mm-hmm. And now we're pretty much saying, hey, at least 50% of the time I can turn that stuff off and save the cost.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I want to, one of the things I noticed today when we talked about HTML5 and Dean's keynote specifically, the way of describing it now is native HTML5.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, native.
And I definitely picked up, I think everybody did, I mean, that was the blog post, native HTML5.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's funny, as we were sort of thinking about this, we thought, you know, how do we describe this? Because for us, really, when you look at what we're trying to do with Internet Explorer is really to build not just the browser, but all the other pieces of the puzzle, so that we really minimize the number of abstraction layers, if you like, between, you know, the HTML5 and the JavaScript and SVG and all the other pieces, mm-hmm. and just physically, you know, doing the stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, you like to call it coding to the metal, and
yes.
That's a good sort of phrase. I was kind of, you know, almost saying, like, I think the way I kind of like to think about it is HTML5 is almost like the new instruction set.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, and so we talk about ARM. We talked about ARM this morning.
Yeah.
We talk about, you know, Intel and many other different environments. But if HTML5 and JavaScript can become that new instruction set, it's obviously a much higher level of instruction sets. But,
sure.
But it means that suddenly you're optimizing for something different. And, you know, clearly from a Microsoft perspective, where we see a strength in Internet Explorer is by really focusing on that, mm-hmm. and by really focusing on making Internet Explorer the best browser on Windows, mm-hmm. we don't have to abstract for all the other things that other people have to do. And so, sure. you know, that's a real challenge sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I genuinely look at the work that Firefox have to do, for example, and they've got some great hardware acceleration support in mm-hmm. Windows, but the work they have to do there to go and be the instruction set, be native on mm-hmm. each of those platforms, is a lot of work, and you know, even then it's difficult, because at some point they have to choose, do we actually write some stuff that is really designed to run everywhere and then specialize little bits of it, or do we really optimize for one operating system? And actually they've kind of done the latter. Hmm. On Windows, Firefox is faster than on say the Mac, and so they're kind of caught in this bind here that they want to be good citizens, and I believe they want to be good citizens.
Yeah.
But they have this challenge about, do we try and produce the best browser for a particular environment, or do they just try and sort of, you know, peanut butter across everything and divert the resources across all?
Well, and every layer of abstraction complicates things.
Yes.
And I saw in some of the IE10 demos, there were subtle things like the GPU utilization is obviously the big one that everybody can see, that we're going deeply into the machine and utilizing the resources of the machine, and Windows plays a huge role in that. Mm-hmm. But the new one for me was the music blending, the sound blending.
Yeah.
Here was two different apps, both making sounds. When you went to one, you heard the sound of that one. You went to the other, you heard the other one. But when you slid between them, it actually mixed the music together.
Yeah.
And
that's interesting.
For a hardware guy, I immediately thought, wow, you're really messing down deep in the audio codecs of the operating system to make that work.
Yeah.
That is not a simple abstraction.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
very specific to the hardware.
Yeah, that's direct sound. And obviously the APIs are available to anybody.
Sure.
But it's
you've got to do the work.
Not simple code to write.
And direct sound is a Windows thing.
Right.
It's,
right.
Not, it's nowhere else.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, Internet Explorer only been, they asked Dean about that this morning.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Why, Chris Perillo, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you? When are you going to have IE for the Mac? Because remember, we used to have IE for the Mac, Unix, and various other things.
That was a long time ago, Charles.
Hey, I was at Microsoft back then. I remember the IE on, I think it was like a Sun workstation.
Yes, Spark.
Yeah.
I was there, too.
Wow. Right on,
so,
man.
Yeah.
So, the question I would ask is, so it's clearly about taking the most advantage out of the hardware through mm-hmm. Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And the demos to me were just insanely impressive. I love the idea of native HTML5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really look forward to learning more about what that means as we go forward. So hopefully people will download the latest platform preview, which is for developers.
Yeah.
And tinker around and basically GPU for everyone.
It
doesn't get kind of evangelized like that often, but that's really what it is.
Right. And obviously we like, you know, the things like the test drive are just great for people to start experimenting. And, you know, we've had a lot of people here this week who are obviously starting to get to grips with HTML5 for the first time.
Yes.
We did a session earlier on today, one of the guys in my team, John Papper, a lot of people know him from Silverlight TV.
Yes.
And so he's been sort of working with some people to kind of build some interesting HTML5 samples. And then Giorgio Sardo, who did the session,
of course,
did the session called HTML5 for Silverlight.
Yes.
It was packed.
Was
standing
it?
Room only.
Did you go?
I I left because it was so full. I thought, I'm going to give my seat over to a paying customer, and got out of there. My staff reflex. I go to so many conferences. It's just you know, I had an opportunity to interview Giorgio on Don and Rocks, so I get a chance to talk to him anyway. I'm going to let these folks, who this is the only time I'm going to see him, go see that session. But the vibe in the room, and they. The crazy part is Giorgio told me he got ready half an hour early because the room was already full, and then had to wait as it got thicker and thicker in there to actually do his presentation. Yeah. So really interesting session and exciting to see how many folks are even if you're coming from a XAML background, are very focused on what are we going to do with HTML5.
Yeah. Excellent.
And I'm going to show for VisitMix because, of course, sessions live on live.visitmix.com, right?
Or yes, exactly.
I don't know if it's there right now. It'll be there very soon.
It will be there very soon, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because we also had up on here recently was the creator of Script Sharp. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that in the arsenal of a Silverlight developer wanting to target HTML5, I have this asset of code. Have to understand that it needs to actually be able to be translatable.
Right.
I can't just assume that it's going to be translatable. Yeah. But there are some great tools out there, and Akil's done some great work. Highly optimized JavaScript.
He's a super engineer.
Super engineer.
And that takes us back to the keynote again with the update tools for MVC3. And one of the big features in that is direct support for HTML5. Mm. So are we starting to see some really interesting tooling coming out of Microsoft to make HTML5 just another part of the things that you do when you build web pages with these tools?
Sure.
Yeah.
Just make it, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah. You know? So let me ask a question, Dr. Sneef. So now that we've announced the IE9 on the phone, you did make that announcement, right?
Yeah, back at Mobile World Congress. Yeah.
So the question I would ask you is, you know, when you think about the sort of native HTML running on a PC or laptop that has 6 gigs of RAM, 4 gigs of RAM, a couple processors, you know, super excellent GPU, maybe two GPUs, versus a phone, where you're going to have a semi-constrained memory, right? Or like usable memory.
Sure.
Talk to me a little bit about...
And also power is a challenge on this device, right? Because battery life is so critical.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because that even more strongly makes the point, really, that native HTML5 is the way to go. Because if you've got to have something that is going to run on a small-scale device, you want to get every ounce of power out of it. You want to use it to its fullest environment advantage. And from a battery life point of view, you want to be sensitive about how you work and be efficient so that you're not wasting any cycles. And so that's exactly the model that we're adopting here. And so, you know, we'll talk more about the phone tomorrow, but you'll see, you know, we just continue to work on that. And, you know, at Mobile World Congress, Joe Belfiore showed, this was back in February, I think it was, showed I9 running on the phone. Mm-hmm. And he was showing some of the same demos, actually the fish demo, the classic fish demo that will forever be the kind of the canonical example of performance. He was, you know, just showing exactly the same demos. And the chips are pretty similar across device to device, you know, across Android, iOS, Windows Phone. Sure. They really are, you know, there's just a few standard parts that are pretty common. Mm. And, you know, power and battery are proportional. There's no kind of magic bullets to suddenly, you know, deliver, you know, 10 times the power with the same battery life.
Sure.
And so being able to do that, you know, was just sort of really a good showcase of this is what native HTML5 looks like. Here's what it looks like when you're not really taking full advantage there.
Sure. Well, and WinPhone 7 does have a GPU in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, GPUs consume power too, but they do fewer cycles to do the same thing in a graphical rendering. So you can do it in a CPU, it's just going to cost you more power to get it done. Mm-hmm. So having that GPU there means you can get the same number of pixels, the same sort of behavior, less power consumed.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So for people who want to know a little bit more about the construction of Windows Phone 7, we will have Istvan Cezade. I messed your name up. And I can't even get close to pronouncing the next name, but leave it to say these are two of the architects and very senior developers who work on the OS side of the phone, which is, of course, a very different OS than our friendly neighborhood Windows.
Well, it's not that different. I mean, it's still Windows,
right? Fair enough.
Windows,
it has a kernel,
right?
Yes. Fair enough. So you being on the outside again, tell me a little bit about what you think, thought about sort of the basic lessons of the day. Number one, do you program in HTML5?
When they let me, yes.
When they let you.
Yeah, you know, often I'm more involved in organizing businesses and setting things up than I am to get to write the core code. I typically only get to write the sample code. So HTML5 certainly been on my radar as an important technology.
Yeah.
And for me, the concern is how our web development process is going to change to deal with this new plethora of browsers. So I'm very interested in seeing how I9 standards compliance is going, that how much is the code that I write for IE9 going to work in Chrome, is going to work in Firefox, and so forth, and how much, you know, if browser code we're going to end up writing. Because we did that for HTML4 for a very long time. So, you know, I think there's a concern there and a challenge there. And it's really what excited me in the keynote was watching how Microsoft's managing that by keeping the unstable specifications as separate downloads in labs and getting the more stable stuff, you know, compliant with the standards and testable. And so we could see, oh, if it'll pass this test, if this browser passes this test, then I could probably write this code pretty stably.
Which is important in the arsenal of a web developer.
It is, yeah.
And we take that seriously. I mean,
I mean, that's. I'm pleased you bring that up because I think you're right. There's specifications that are really experimental, you know. And I think you know the fun video with WebSockets was kind of an example of that, where things are still moving, you know.
I don't know that the street developer realizes how fast things are going on behind. And that's what that video really indicates.
Right.
Here was someone who clearly should not have been using that technology, WebSockets yet, didn't understand, this is beta, it will break.
And I
think it's partly our fault. We tend to abuse the term beta. We hold things in beta much longer, and people ship on it when they shouldn't. And that's why I appreciated the lab approach. It was like, anything could happen here. If you really want this, you can go get it. You have to download it yourself. But, you know, be prepared. It could break.
And so I think you're right. There are those things that are just you've got to really proceed with caution. And then you kind of move further into the kind of the continuum of stable sort of specs. And even there, you know, it's important to know that even like CSS 2.1. So this is, we're talking about stuff that every web developer, web designer thinks is kind of, you know, old hat, passe. That's only just today gone to a proposed recommendation. And that's you know, that's the kind of the baseline. And the reason they've gone to that kind of level is they're waiting for enough browsers to implement it in a consistent, you know, standardized fashion. And so, you know, at that side of the space, what we've tried to do in this vein of same markup is to contribute and thousands of tests that really look at the specification and try and document it in, it's really unit testing. I mean, it's unit testing for the specification. And so we say, well, let's see how we're doing, how other browsers are doing. And then, you know, I'm sure other browsers do similar things, but for us, every single build, we run those unit tests as a regression test, essentially, to check that we still are
haven't broken it.
And for me, that's what really stability means. Is you get to that point when you've got the tests, when you can prove that you passed the specification. It's not just about, hey, you know, I can add a canvas tag to the DOM and it doesn't fail. Which is ironically what some of the test sort of sites do.
You need to check that.
But that's not enough. You know, it's like, well, okay, but if I draw a line, does it appear the right way? And if I draw it dotted, and if I do, you know, if I blend something with global composite operation, does that actually blend correctly in the right way? So many different steps you actually have to go and validate and test and. So that's the spectrum for me. Really.
Well, and I like the shift that's happened in the specification. Say we look at CSS gradients, where they deliberately said, hey, everyone's going to have a different implementation right now in each browser, and we're going to tag the feature with the build, with the particular vendor prefix. So that the developer who ignores that, who says, oh, I'm just going to use gradients, it looks great, I'm going to use it, can't help but be reminded, this is the IE implementation of gradients. This is the Chrome implementation of gradients, because it won't work if you don't.
So
you don't delude yourself. Where if we had skipped that step and just used a common tag, the fact that the implementations were different, now everyone screams. So it's like we've made it explicit that you have to acknowledge this is not a ratified standard. This is specific to this browser.
And that's when you get the vendor prefixes.
Because,
I mean, in some sense, standards are all about implementation. It's implementation details at the utmost.
Well, the standard is useless if it's not implemented, right?
I mean, that's what I mean. What I'm saying is you're guaranteed that if this is a standard, it's implemented exactly the same. However, there may be some implementation details that are different. For example, you know, for a browser that has to target multiple operating systems, they may have to do different things to interact at the at the native level
under
in
the
that context. But the basic thing is the users can expect this is how it's going to work. It's a really incredibly complicated process.
At the same time, there's no substitute for building it and testing it to actually know that it works. We can't write the whole spec and say, okay, go out and implement this. We'll miss things, inevitably,
Sure, of course.
So then that's like where this gray area comes in, that you come up with a sort of soft standard. This is where we want to go. Everybody goes off, makes their implementation the way they want to. We push back and forth on that. You see how people adopt it. And then the standard gets stiffer. And I mean, like I said, CSS 2.1 finally really settling out after 6 years,
oh,
7 years?
Maybe longer.
It's a long time.
I'm so pleased you kind of bring it up. Because really what that just says at the end of the day is you should be very cautious about declaring mission accomplished.
Oh, I completely agree with you. We've seen plenty of examples of that. But it's also interesting. It's been, I mean, HTML4 is 10 years old, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really, you're looking at HTML5 as the manifestation of what did we want to do with a browser over the past 10 years, and gathering up all those ideas and different ways we've implemented them and try to make it into a specification we can step forward. So the browser takes a big leap forward right now, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens next with all the other technologies as well, you know, because you know, for better or worse, web technologies move relatively slowly. It takes time to get this stuff figured out, and some of the plug-in technologies, we have an opportunity to move much more quickly because we're not trying to support as wide a base, and we can innovate and see what comes next.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah.
Which is brings up a good point. I mean, the thing about standards seems to me is that they never end. And with proprietary software, you sort of don't have, you know, when I talk about that, what I mean is I look across the whole landscape of the industry, from Apple to Microsoft to all the big players wanting to go down the standards route. Because when you do that, then everybody has to agree. Everybody has to make sure that it's the right thing to do. And as you said, it's a slow process, but it's the right thing to do. That's all I'm saying. If you invent technology X and throw it out there, no standards, no boards or anything, you get it out there and you can iterate on it quickly.
Right.
But it's not a standard.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw that out there because I think sometimes we lose track of the fact that there are two core philosophies, not at war, but in opposition.
Yeah.
But I also think they're complementary. If we don't have those innovative proprietary approaches running out ahead to see what people care about. I don't think you're going to see, you know, it was the flash and silver light players for video that helped drive the video tech. That showed clearly this needs to be here.
Now, Dr. Sneath brought his little friend here. Tell us about your little friend.
Yeah, I just wanted to say hi on behalf of the dog. This is my six-year-old daughter's pet dog.
Right
she
on.
She takes it to bed every night with her. She gave it to me whilst I'm here in Las Vegas.
That's awesome.
It's been accompanying me. So, Esther, this is Doggy. He's okay. He's in Las Vegas. I've not lost him.
And he's on the web now, too.
Excellent, man. Hey, what an excellent day. Great news. Native HTML5. All goodness. Thanks for coming on Channel 9,
Thank
Dr.
you, Charles.
Sneath.
It's been fun.
It's been way too long.
Thanks,
nice
Charles.
To see you again, Richard.
You bet.
See you guys tomorrow.